Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
This morning I'll be reading Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. Genesis 12, 1 through 4. We'll be reading from the New American Standard Version. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go forth from your country, and from your relatives, and from your father's house, to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran.
We've been thinking about what it means to be in Him all year, and this month one of the verses that we're using to remind ourselves of that mission is Ephesians 2 and verse 10. If you would, let's all say this together. "For we are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand so that we would walk in them." What has God prepared for us? What in my life are good works that have been prepared for me to do? It's an important question. It's one we've been asking all month. We've also been spending time on Sunday mornings thinking about the book of Genesis. The series we've just titled, "You Are Here," because when I understand what's in the book of Genesis, that gives me an orientation to understand the rest of the Bible. And we've had some very special helpers that have helped introduce these thoughts for us from our five-year-old and our kindergarten classes. And this morning, Carson King is going to help us get an introduction to Abraham.
So, tell me, what is one of your favorite things about Bible class?
You get to ask questions.
You get to ask questions from the teacher. Yeah. Why do you think, if you were going to tell a bunch of grown-ups why they should go to Bible class, why do you think that everybody should go to Bible class?
Because to learn about God.
Yeah. What kinds of things can you think of something you learned about in Bible class? What would be an example of something that you talk about in Bible class?
Jesus.
Yeah. What about in your Bible classes, have you ever talked about Abraham? Tell me about Abraham.
To leave his house.
And where did he go after he left his house?
To God.
Yeah. He went where God led him. Yeah, absolutely. Did Abraham believe in God? How do we know that Abraham really believed in God? He did, yeah. He obeyed God. He did what God asked him to do. Do you think it would be hard to leave your house and go somewhere totally different? Why would that be hard if you had to do that? What would be hard about it?
Because it takes a long time for us to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, it took a long time. Abraham was on the road a lot. What if we read in the Bible something that we're supposed to do? What would we do if we're like Abraham and we know God wants us to do something? What should we do?
We should do the right thing.
Absolutely. Just like Abraham did. Do you think sometimes it was really tough to do what Abraham did? What's an example of something we can do to show our faith?
Look in the Bible.
Yeah. And when we see something in the Bible for us to do, what should we do?
Do it.
Do it. Absolutely. That is awesome. Awesome job, man.
One of the great things about seeing these children introduce these stories for us is it reminds us of how complicated we can make things, but how even children understand this is what you do. If it's in the Bible, you're supposed to do it. And Carson did an excellent job, and they've all done a great job. But as we move through Genesis, we come to a life that would be impossible to summarize in just one sermon. In fact, just a couple of years ago, we did a Sunday night series through the life of Abraham. But I want us to think this morning about taking a tour of his life. Because there are certain things that crop up time and time again in Abraham's life. One of them we read about in Genesis 22. It was an early morning. Abraham gets up because he's been given a command. He takes his son, some servants with him. They'll only be gone a few days. And I wonder what the conversation was like on that trip to the place God was going to show Abraham. After all, Abraham had for a long time been going to places where God would show him, and God was showing him one specific place where he was going to do something that's hard for us to imagine. And I wonder if there was conversation between Abraham and Isaac. If Abraham was trying to soak in every moment that he could before they got to the place where they were going, or if he was distracted. Maybe he was looking off in the distance while Isaac talked to him. Maybe he tried to make his son laugh. Maybe he was trying to just enjoy the moment. Then they get to the place where they were going. Abraham tells the servants to stay there. They go and build an altar. And it must have taken a few minutes for Isaac to realize there was no sacrifice. There was no animal that they had with him. And then what came next? I wish we had more detail. Did Abraham have a conversation with Isaac and explain what was going to happen? It seems because of Abraham's age and Isaac's age, surely Isaac submitted to being bound and placed on an altar, even though that's hard for us to imagine. And when Abraham's ready to make the sacrifice, when he raises the knife in order to do what seems unthinkable, if it were a movie, that's where the freeze frame would pause. And that's where we'd get a flashback to the beginning of Abraham's journey, because this is not the first altar that Abraham makes. In fact, I've heard several say over the years that you could chart Abraham's life by looking at the altars that he built. And that's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to look at the altars that Abraham made along the way. An altar is a place of sacrifice. Even as we use it today, it has a sacred context. We often associate it with weddings. We think about someone who is at the altar, the bride and the groom. Or we might talk about someone being left at the altar, this idea that there's a special and a sacred place there where you're doing something that is not just before the people around you, but before God. I can remember being in college. A group of us went to Jackson, Tennessee to hear Barbara Bush speak. And she told the story about a young bride who was very nervous, who didn't like being around people, was not comfortable in front of big crowds. And so she was getting increasingly nervous on her wedding day because she knew she was going to have to walk down the aisle and say some things. And so the wedding planner took her aside and said, "It's very simple. You don't have to look at anyone else in the room. Just focus on three things. Focus on the aisle you're walking down. Watch where you're going. When you get there and you get up, you look at the altar. You stand there while your father gives you away. And then you turn and you look at your husband. Your future husband. Those are the only three things you have to look at. The aisle, and then the altar, and then look at him. That's all you've got to do." And so she was repeating that to herself over and over again, but she was very nervous, and she really was determined she was going to do this. She was going to fight her fear. And so she was thinking, "I've got to go down the aisle, and I've got to look at the altar, and then I've got to look at him." What really was a little bit disturbing for her father was when her father went to walk her down the aisle, he saw her with this determined look on her face, and she was just saying over and over again, "I'll alter him. I'll alter him. I'll alter," you know, over again. So you might have to think about that for a second. But that's also not a good way to enter into a marriage, but it's a reminder to us that an altar is associated with something that's special, something that's sacred. And you can actually chart Abraham's altars and get a hint at what's coming later in Genesis. And so, for instance, when we look at the first altar we read about right after the passage that Christopher just read for us at Shechem. Shechem was a place where Abraham passes through as far as the side of Shechem. He built an altar there, Genesis 12. And then a few chapters later, when we get to his grandson, Jacob comes safely into Shechem. He builds an altar there. And then a couple of chapters later, as Jacob is traveling through with his family, they take these household gods, these little household idols that they had, the rings which were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under an oak which was near Shechem. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. Then when we get all the way to Joshua 24, the people have been in Egyptian slavery. They've been released from that slavery. God has appointed Moses to lead them out. They're going into the promised land. It's at Shechem where Joshua gathers people together and says, choose this day who you will serve. Another place where Abraham makes an altar is Bethel, in the area of Bethel. And so Genesis 12:8 tells that he's east of Bethel. You get to Genesis 35 as Jacob's continuing the journey. He comes to Bethel. And then you get to Joshua as he's leading the children of Israel into Canaan. He goes to that same place from Jericho to Ai, which is east of Bethel, that same region. Or we think of Hebron, another place where there was an altar built by Abram. And then in Genesis 35, Jacob comes to Isaac at Hebron. In Joshua 10, they go into battle at Hebron. And so it's almost like these altars set out a template for what's coming, for what's going to happen when his grandson comes through, and what's going to happen when God's people go into the promised land. So this morning, let's look at each of these altars, and then we'll come back to that one in Genesis 22 and see what we can learn. When we get to Shechem, as we think about that altar, that first altar, we're reminded of an altar of promise, an altar filled with the promises of God. We just read those promises in Genesis chapter 12, and it's interesting to see the different areas of Abram's life that God said he was going to bless. Now, this is before his name gets changed to Abraham and before Sarai's name gets changed to Sarah. But I'll just warn you ahead of time, every time I preach on Abraham, I always end up calling him Abraham before his name was really changed, or Abram afterwards. So we're talking about the same people as we go through here. But he says he's going to give them a land. Now, if we compare what we read in Genesis 12 with one chapter earlier in Genesis 11, and then what God says to Abraham in Genesis 15, we find out that the first call that Abram gets from God is out of Ur, out of the land of Ur. Once we get to chapter 12, he comes forth out of Haran. They entered from Ur into Canaan. He was there with his father. But then in Genesis 12, God says now he's calling him out of Haran. He's going to give him a new land. He's calling him to go to a place, and if you notice the way he describes it, it's the land that I will show you. It's hard to start on a journey if you don't know where you're going. I can remember years before we had cell phones that could tell you exactly how to get somewhere. What we had in our cars in Memphis were these spiral-bound handy maps. And these were grids of the whole city. And you could find just about any place you wanted. And that was my job if I was in the passenger seat. I could navigate us to where we were going. We like to know where we're going. Now you can start driving somewhere and not even know exactly where you're going to end up. You can just punch in an address. We like to know exactly where we're going. But it doesn't help us to have a map. It doesn't help us to have an iPhone app if we don't know what address to put in. If we don't know where to say, okay, this is the specific place I want to go. Abram is going to journey with God and he doesn't have that address filled in. God's going to show him. How is this going to work? Well, you're going to go where I show you. I'm going to make you a great nation. How's that going to work? Well, just wait. I'll show you. Abram's life is a reminder of what happens when we deal with the challenge of waiting on God to show us. He says that he's going to give him a land. He's going to make him a great nation. In Genesis 1, we find the creation of man, the creation of human beings. But in Genesis 12, we see the creation of God's special people. So we have people show up in Genesis 1, and then God's people, Israel, get their beginning in Genesis 12. He says he's going to make you a great nation and give you a great name. We were reminded last week about those in Babylon who wanted to make a name for themselves, but that's not the way it works. God is the one who gives you a name. And then he would not only give him a name, but make him a blessing. It was always the intention that God's people would be a blessing to the whole world. Did you notice that? All the families of the earth will be blessed. This is the beginning of the gospel, because through Abraham, every family in the earth is going to be blessed. That was always God's intention. So God makes Abraham a promise, and then Abraham then has to make a decision. He has to decide to leave where he had been. Now, he had evidently grown up in Ur, and Ur, from what we can tell, was a center of pagan worship to a god, Sin, S-I-N. You have this god that was worshipped there, and now he's got to move out of that, move out of worship of those elements to living a new life. And it's interesting that that happens at Shechem, when he makes this altar. Because it's at Shechem that Jacob will take the household gods that they'd had with them, that they'd accumulated, and bury them and put a stone under a tree there at Shechem as a reminder that they were going to be dedicated to God. And it was at Shechem that Joshua would stand up in Joshua 24 and say, "Choose you this day whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You can choose to serve the gods of Egypt. You can choose to serve the gods in the surrounding nations, or you can choose to serve the Lord. Isn't that interesting? Three different times in Shechem, we see people who have to choose to follow God instead of other gods. Maybe that's a reminder for us. When it comes to God's promise, I've got to make a decision. Am I willing to bury anything? Is there anything that needs to be buried that I need to dig a hole and put that in there and put a rock over there saying, no, this is a sign I'm following God? How do I respond to the promises of God? And it's not that long after this altar that we read about Abram building another one. And this is interesting because it's an altar that we read about twice in Genesis. So if you're looking at verse 8 of Genesis chapter 12, you see that he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. Now what happens after that in Genesis chapter 12, when a famine comes, he does another thing that gets repeated several times in the Bible. He goes to Egypt. It makes sense that Egypt, being near the Nile River, would be able to handle famine and challenges better than regions that didn't have access to that water and where land wasn't as fertile. And so Genesis 12 tells us that Abraham goes into Egypt, but he's worried about himself and he makes a decision to put himself first. And so he goes in with Sarai. He's worried about the fact that Sarai is so beautiful that he could get into trouble, that he could be attacked by being known as her husband. And so he tells people that she is his sister, which is one of those half-truths that's designed to deceive someone. We actually have evidence in the ancient world in that region of individuals who would be half-sisters but also wives. It sounds uncommon to us, but it wasn't uncommon then. But he decides not to tell the whole truth. And because of that, Pharaoh takes Sarai as his wife, as one of his wives. And so now you have a situation where Abram has put himself ahead of his wife, and he's profiting from being known as her brother until finally God intervenes. Pharaoh is upset that he didn't tell him what happened. Abram and Sarai and Lot leave. They have riches and wealth that they gained there. But when they come back in Genesis 13, he comes back to that same altar. Verse 3, he went on his journeys from the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he made there formerly. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. When Jesus tells the parable of the prodigal son, we often picture that scene of the son who's finally decided, after he's wasted everything that he had gotten from his father, to come back home, and his father runs out to greet him. That's a prodigal returning. I think what we have here is something very similar. Abram's coming back to the altar he'd made. He's renewing and he's rededicating his faith. He knew what it meant to put himself first. He knew what it meant to think only of himself. And now as he comes back to this altar, he's reminded of the faith he had, of the promises God has given, and he's going to do things differently. And even though Abram does not live a life free from mistakes from here on out, we do see some maturity that develops here. And so he comes back to the altar. This morning, you may need to come back to the altar. Maybe it's this place specifically. Maybe it's this baptistry that you were baptized in, but since then you've realized I've let so many things distract me and I've put myself first. I need to come back. It may be that this is a place where you've heard the message of the gospel. You've heard how you should live over the years, but that's kind of slipped away. You need to come back and rededicate yourself. Sometimes we just need to come back to God, back to the altar. Being in Egypt not only had an effect on Abram, but evidently it also had an effect on Lot. Because both Abram and Lot begin to grow. They have greater herds and number of servants that serve them. And so it becomes difficult for them to coexist and to live together. And so later on in chapter 13, we read about another altar that takes place. It begins in verse 8. When Abram says, "Let there be no strife between you and me," to Lot, "Why don't you choose where you want to go?" And so the text says in verse 10, "Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward." So Abram gives Lot a choice. You can choose where you want to go. And he sees this incredibly well-watered, fertile area. And he says, "That's where I'm going to end up." Now, it's a little strange that in a time where seniority mattered, in a time where being the patriarch of a family mattered, that Abram would let Lot choose first. But he does. He's focused on peace. And when Abraham seeks to produce peace, God comes after Lot has left and reminds him of his promise. And so then in verse 18, Abram moved his tent and came and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord. He made a decision. He had just put himself first in the previous chapter and not cared as much about what happened to his wife. Now he's putting Lot first. He's letting Lot have first choice. He's pursuing peace. It's a reminder of what Jesus would say in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew 5, "Blessed are the peacemakers." Or what Paul would write to the church at Rome in Romans 12, "As far as it depends on you, live at peace with one another." There's something about pursuing peace that's special. And it can be challenging. I mean, just look at the ingredients in this situation. You have family members who have both become wealthy, and there's an area of land, and not every place is well watered, and not every place is fertile. That's a recipe for family conflict. But Abram decides to choose peace. And it's interesting that right after he chooses peace, that God reaffirms that promise. I think that's important, because you have to imagine, if you'd had that promise as Abram, that you're going to be a great nation and you're going to have a land. And he tried to sort of take control of it in Egypt. He tried to sort of take control of his own destiny. But here he's saying, "No, you know what, Lot, you choose. God is going to fulfill his promise." He's trusting in God to fulfill that promise. Now we know he struggles with that level of trust. He and Sarai both do. And so in the next few chapters, their names are changed to Abraham and Sarah. They try to rush along God's plan by adopting someone in their household to be an heir. But that's not the way God had it planned. Sarah gives Abraham Hagar, her servant, to have a child with. And they have Ishmael. But that's not what God had planned. Finally, you get the promised son, Isaac. And it must have seemed so unlikely that Abram could be a great nation when he just doesn't have a child. And so Isaac shows up, and then we get to our fourth altar, an altar of pain, of painful sacrifice, where God begins in Genesis 22 by reminding Abraham just how much he loves Isaac when he says, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love," as if there was any confusion over exactly what son was going to be sacrificed. And this isn't something that we see from the God of Scripture. A sacrifice of a human, a sacrifice of a child, that was something that the pagan gods did. Why would God ask this? Can you imagine Abraham trying to understand? How is this going to work? Why would God ask me to do this? When we look through the lens of the New Testament, we find out that Abraham was reasoning in his mind that God could raise people from the dead. And so that had to be how it's going to happen. But he takes Isaac. They go on this journey. You wonder about the conversation. You wonder what happens when they get there. It seems like Isaac could have overpowered Abraham, could have kept him from doing this. At some point, Isaac must have been willing in being laid on the altar. And so they build this altar in Genesis 22. And Abraham's going to do what would seem impossible for us to comprehend. But he built it there, he arranged the wood, he bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And it's easy for us to skip to the end of the story. We know when he raises up the knife that that's not God's plan for him to take Isaac's life, that God has another sacrifice caught there in the bushes that's there for Abraham to offer. But think about how painful this thought would have been. Not just the family bond and connection, which is painful enough. It's hard for us to imagine that. If you've ever watched a child of one of your children suffer, you know how difficult that is. But think of what Isaac represented. Isaac represented the promises of God. Isaac represented the nation that would be there. And so God is asking Abram, even the thing that you value in life the most, the thing that you've waited for the longest, would you be willing to sacrifice that in order to serve me? Would you be willing to sacrifice that thing that you thought about every morning when you woke up and that was the last thought before you went to bed each night? That same son that you and Sarah had countless conversations about. Would you be willing to sacrifice that? And so Abram makes that decision. Abraham decides. And I just wonder if he was building that altar, if he thought back to that first altar in Genesis 12. I wonder if he thought back to the altars he'd made along the way. I can't imagine anyone being more painful than this one. But what God does, in a way, almost, keeping that arm from coming down and doing what Abraham was apparently willing to do, God reminds Abraham that he will provide. In fact, that's what Abraham told Isaac about the sacrifice, the Lord will provide. And God did provide a sacrifice for them. We looked at the other three altars and the way they show up again later in the text. This place shows up again later in the text. In fact, when you think about the mount in which the temple is built in the New Testament, when you think about the kind of sacrifice that takes place, when there is one who enters into the world to sacrifice his life, the son of a father, a one and only son, as Jesus comes into the world and sees a world full of people who are separated from God with sin, and there's no way that they could bridge that gap, the Lord will provide, and he did provide. He provided a sacrifice. And so, even though it might not have looked like an altar, the cross there outside the city was a sacrifice of the child of God, the Son of God, and it was made for us. That means today, if you need to have that initial acceptance of God's promise, if you need to do what Abraham does in Genesis 12 and decide, I'm going to leave my life, I'm going to leave what I had been doing, and I'm going to start a new life, you can make that decision today. You can put Christ on in baptism. And because of that sacrifice, you can live for him. It may be that you need to come back, that you need to return to the altar, that you need to renew your first love and come back to serve him. You know, it could be that there's something going on in your life right now and you need to pursue peace, that you need to leave here this morning and to make something right with a friend or with a family member. Or it may be that there's something you need to give up in your life in order to really follow God. And it's hard because it's something that really matters to you and something that you think you need, but you know as you read Scripture that God calls you to serve him. Whatever the case is, all of us have a great deal to think about as we reflect on Abraham's life. And all of us also have a blessing in a room full of people who'd love to encourage us. If you'd like to pray with a couple of our elders right after this worship service, you can go out that door and there'll be a couple of elders there who'd love to talk with you and to pray for you. Or if we can help you in any way, either assist you in being baptized into Christ or pray for you, please let us know as we stand and as we sing together.